Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Khursheed Irani. She's the head of global talent services at C-Prime. Good morning, Khursheed. How are you?
Good morning, Fred.
Good. Well, it's afternoon where I am. I'm on the East Coast, you on the West Coast, but either way. All right, before we start this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we would appreciate if you would take just a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Khursheed. Please give us a brief overview and background on yourself and your organization, Khursheed.
Sure. Firstly, thank you, Fred, for having me on. It's a great pleasure. And thank you for the opportunity. Giving you a brief background about myself, I came to the United States in 2002 to complete my MBA in global business and marketing. I had worked in India as well in the hospitality industry. I started my career after my graduation with the Oberoi in Mumbai, which is a leading hotel of the world, followed by two international airlines, British Airways and Delta. I moved into the recruiting space in 2005 in the United States. I have been very fortunate to be a part of two companies that have grown exponentially, joining upfront as one of the key early employees. Both of these were, you know, listed in multiple fast-growing lists in the United States year after year. The startup environment, as you know, is very fast-paced and chaotic. However, it is a great platform for learning, which it was for me, and which I'm very grateful for. I joined C-Prime in 2010. Zubin Irani, who was the CEO of C-Prime then, was actually an ex-candidate of mine. I was trying to place him at one of my clients, which was Visa. However, you know, things didn't work out. He joined Visa through some other vendor. But when he started C-Prime, he remembered our conversation and the interaction that we'd had. And he asked me to come and join C-Prime and actually run the recruiting business unit. I've been with C-Prime for more than 12 years now. This is it's going to be 13 years in January. When I joined, we were a very small organization. However, in 2014, we were bought over by a French company called Alten. After which we have ourselves acquired a couple of companies in the United States, one in Ukraine, and recently one in the UK, which is the United Kingdom. C-Prime is key partners with GitLab, Atlassian, AWS. I head the global talent services team. That means I own the profit and loss of my whole business unit. And my business unit roughly is divided into two parts. One is the sales and business development, which brings in all the requirements. And the other is the sourcing or the recruiting unit, as you might say, which fulfills these requirements with high agility. These two units actually within the organization work very closely with each other. And we meet every morning in a true agile, you know, in a true agile way. I'm happy to be here and answer any other questions that you might have.
Oh, that's good. And it's wonderful to see how diverse of a background you have. You talked about some of the big companies you've worked for, both in India and globally. So that's very impressive. I want to move on to one of the things that's more recent, especially in the recruitment space. For most of last year and even parts of this year, there were talks about the great resignation across multiple industries. What are some of the implications that you're seeing as far as this trend?
Well, the term great resignation in my mind sounds a little too grave or maybe overblown. We did see a high level of attrition, which kept all of us, as in my team, my recruiters, busy. But it was not like the offices were half empty or products were not delivered, right? The world is still spinning. Life is moving on. We have the iPhone 14, which launched on time, and I know everyone's waiting for it. But we did see some supply chain disruptions, but society did not, you know, ground to a halt as a whole. From whatever I've been reading about the new employment data that's coming out, you know, the great resignation actually is, you know, becoming the great reshuffle. That means a lot of people are quitting their jobs, but they did not quit working altogether. They moved into similar roles with different employers or into new roles which had better pay, better job satisfaction, advancement in their careers. So I think overall, this has been a very positive experience for the employees as they got a chance to sit back, you know, reflect, reevaluate their long-term career and life goals.
Yeah. So I want to touch on something else you said there. You know, offices were not, you know, half empty. You can argue they were because a lot of people are working remote. And some companies have begun steps to fully return their entire workforce to the office.
Yes.
What advice do you have for job seekers and recruitment firms around dealing with this change?
That's a very good question because this is a very current scenario right now, right? People have been working from home for the last 2.5 years, and now suddenly they are asked to come into the office. So for job seekers, you know, they like what I see, there are three kinds of job seekers. There are ones who want to go into the office. They're very happy going into the office 100% of the time.
Yeah.
There's a second, you know, set that is flexible, as in, you know, they are okay with the hybrid kind of setup 2 to 3 days of the week. And then there are third who actually say, no, I don't want to go into the office at all. I want to work remotely. I feel a lot of people fall into the middle category, which is like the flexibility, hybrid setup, etc. Right? Uh-huh. This is fine as most employers are also hybrid. I don't think it is going to go into the pre-COVID level where employees are expected to come into work 5 days of the week. I do know some companies, especially in the Valley, like Broadcom is asking people to come 5 days of the week. And I know they've already started that. But I think most of them, like Apple, Google, they're a little flexible, right? Come into office 2 to 3 days of the week. So in a scenario like that, right, as, you know, recruitment firms and even as a candidate, right, I think you have to be, you know, when a candidate is talking to the recruiter or the recruiter is talking to the candidate, right, this discussion needs to be happened in the early stages of the recruitment process, like upfront, because clear and open communication will help avoid unpleasant surprises later on in the hiring process. You don't want to hire somebody, take them to the last step and say, okay, now I want to work 100% remote, because it's a waste of time for the recruiter as well as for
the candidate. Yeah. And it's always important to set the expectations, right?
Yes, it is very important. And again, you know, I think the job seekers that are going to be in the flexible category are going to have many more options than those who are not, you know. And if somebody wants to go into work 100%, who's stopping you, right? Employers want to come into work. So I would say the flexibility is important. And I also understand, like, as a mother, right, like, if I got the option to work from home where I could take care of my children, etc., I love that option because it gives me the flexibility to take care of my family as well as my work. So I think the flexible work environment is very, very important right now.
Yeah, and it seems like that is the future as well.
Yes, yes. And employers who offer that, right, are going to be winners in, you know, getting the right talent on board as well.
You're based in the Bay Area, where there are plenty of tech startups competing for top talent. You've mentioned the Googles and the Microsofts. From a talent acquisition perspective, what are some of the ways that you see startups gain a competitive advantage over more established organizations when it comes to attracting new talent?
This is, again, a very good question. And, you know, I question myself many a times because I've worked for like two startups until now, and I've never worked for a larger organization in the United States. But I think there are a lot of benefits to work with a startup. And the first one that I can think about is a larger impact on the product, the organization, and the business outcomes. When I joined CPrime, and giving you my example itself, I had access to my CEO very easily. Whereas if you're working in a bigger organization, right, like say Google, right, who gets to work with Sundar Pichai? Like a few of them, right? Not all.
But that's because they're just much bigger right now. But even, you know, and sorry to interject here, but even within CPrime, I'm pretty sure as time goes by and the company expands, the CEO becomes less and less accessible, not because they don't want to be accessible, but just the demands of the job increase. Isn't that the case?
That is the case. But I would still feel that, you know, as, you know, an employee, right, you're much closer to the product and the organization as compared to a larger organization.
Yeah, at the very beginning, correct.
At the very beginning, yeah. And again, if the company becomes into a 40, 50,000 people company, then it's a different thing. But when we're right. talking about, you know, startup, I'm thinking of it as a smaller organization.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. The other thing that I also see is the, you know, the employee can wear multiple hats, which is, you know, gives the employee a broader experience, right? Working with, you know, getting cross-functional knowledge, working in adjacent areas, which you would not get. And again, another example that I can cite is when I started working with C-Prime, I had interviewed with Google as well. And they said, you know, you will be in the engineering department, you know, hiring Java developers. And I said, will I be only hiring Java developers? And they said, yes, only hiring Java developers. And like, I thought, right. You know, I sat back, thought, do I just want to do that? Like just hire Java developers all my life? The answer was no, you know?
Yeah, that's not a lot of job enrichment. It becomes very monotonous, right?
Yes, and it becomes boring. Like maybe within a month or 2 months, I would have said, you know, I don't want to be here. And I think that's a good, you know, and I'm glad that, you know, I didn't get that job because, you know, I, you know, was able to be with C-Prime. And like, I get to work on all kinds of requirements, you know? So again, wearing multiple hats, getting a broader experience is very, very important. And I think startups do offer you that, right? Right. The other thing is, I also see it's a faster environment and, you know, faster advancement to the career path. And when I say faster environment, there was an example that my husband recently gave me because he's also worked in both. And he had to get signatures for certain things from, you know, his key stakeholders. When he was working for the large organization, you know, it would take him a week to get his signature.
Yeah, whereas, a lot of red tape.
Yeah, and when he was working for the startup, it was much faster. He could just walk up to the CEO's office, get the signature, and within like minutes, you know, the job would move on. So I say that's a very big advantage of the startup because things move fast, you know. And I also right. feel career path, right? If you look at my career path itself, right? I don't think if I would have been at a larger organization, I would have reached where I am today. So it might sound a little bit of a cliche, but have you heard of the term, you will be a big fish in a small pond?
I've heard of that, yes.
Yeah, that's what it is. When you work for a startup, there's, you know, career advancement, which is much more faster, you know. And last but not the least, you know, startups offer a large potential life-changing payout, you know, if the public, you know, company goes public or gets bought out.
Yeah, so, if you own some equity.
Yeah, if you own, and usually startups will give you equity, right? That's how they attract top talent as well, right?
So exactly. What yeah, that's a key point you hit on.
Yes, yes. So what I've seen in my experience in the Valley, right? Like I've seen seasoned professionals with like, say 10 years, sometimes even 20 years of experience working for large organizations, they specifically want to try startups because it's something different. And Silicon yeah. Valley is a, you know, startup culture. You know, people are willing to take pay cuts to just try it out as well.
Got it. Performance evaluations play a key role in determining the future success of employees and teams across different companies. What are some of the attributes of a high-performing team compared to a low-performing team? Are the more talented teams benefiting from the skills of their team members? Is it leadership? What does the data show you from a HR perspective?
I would say both. You know, high-performance teams, you know, benefit both from the talent, from their experienced members, as well as the leaders, you know. Mm-hmm. And what I've also seen is, you know, why does a high-performance team function as a high-performance team? It's because team members have mutual trust and respect for each other. You put your egos aside, you work together, whether you're somebody with 10 years of experience or 1 year of experience on the team. I also see that, you know, you're able to resolve conflicts amicably and constructively. That's so important because two minds don't think alike when you are in an organization, right? But uh-huh. if you see somebody who's, you know, who's got a better idea, you know, You go ahead with that because you're like, okay, you respect that person. It seems like a better thing. So, you know, you might say not the perfect for me, but, you know, I think this is perfect for the organization, right? And right. I also feel, you know, transparency and open communication is, you know, also a very key aspect of why teams perform well because, you know, they know what's going on. They know what's going on with other teams. They know why their product is going to do well. They know why their product is going to fail. What can do they do better for product advancement as well? And I also feel that, you know, they hold each other accountable and responsible. And
I want to talk about transparency. You mentioned transparency. Is transparency being affected or impacted in any way because teams are now diverse? You know, you don't see the people that you work with on a day-to-day basis. What do you think of that? You know, let's take a look at, let's say, the technology space. Do you think transparency has been affected in a negative sense because teams are now fully remote when before COVID, everybody was co-located, so it was easier to see and know what everybody's doing now? I'm saying that knowing that there are collaboration tools that allow for the level of transparency, but the face-to-face kind of engagements, things like that, do you think those are impacted in any way?
I don't think so, to be honest, because, you know, the collaboration tools are awesome. Like, you know, you get onto a Zoom meeting, and I have had situations in my office itself where I wanted to know about something. I picked up the phone or I used Slack and I got my information, you know, immediately. So I also feel that, you know, now with, you know, COVID in a better place, right, with the vaccinations out and people are trying to meet up as well. You know, I personally do that with my team, right? Hey, you know, I understand everybody is not comfortable, but those who are, let's meet up. You know, you don't even need to meet up in an office, right?
Let's meet for team building, right?
Yeah, team building. Let's just meet up for lunch. Let's have a good time. And you know, if there's something important to talk about, then we do bring up those topics and talk about it. So I don't think it has affected or, you know, there's less transparency in any way. You know, I think it's pretty much the same. Again, it depends on from organization to organization. It depends from manager to manager, leader to leader. I think a great leader will always be transparent with their teams, you know.
Now, on the flip side, another question for you, maybe a curveball. What do you think of new employees? So straight out of college, they haven't had that experience dealing and working in a team environment. Do those kind of people need to be, you know, working from the office, or are they going to be introduced into the work environment while working remote?
Working from the office definitely has advantages, especially if you're a new person coming on board, right? Because you get to learn. You get to learn, you get to hear people, you get to do those, you know, conversations in the hallways.
Right. And get to know other team members.
Right, right. I feel sad for those who had to join during the COVID time because they didn't get that office experience, you know.
Right, the onboarding, the true onboarding.
True onboarding experience. But, you know, I also feel right, you know, if you have a buddy rookie system, and I have had that in one of my, when I worked with British Airways, you know, we had this buddy rookie system where I was a rookie, I was a buddy to somebody, and she took great care of me. She made sure I learn everything. Introducing that kind of a system helps, you know, holds people responsible as well. Again, if you want a high performing team, and if you want somebody to be a high performer when he or she is just out of college, right? Have that system in place, make somebody who's experienced, who's willing to teach people a buddy, make the new candidate a rookie, let them learn from each other. And, you know, maybe give some updates, like the buddy gives the update saying, hey, you know, this is what I, you know, taught person X for X number of hours. This is what she's good at. This is what she's not. This is how I'm trying to improve him or her. I think there are a lot of ways in which, you know, you can collaborate and you can bring people together in a cohesive environment, you know. But I do feel that, you know, going into the office was definitely an advantage. It is a disadvantage for the newcomers.
For sure. Brand new employees.
Yes,
right?
Yes, it is.
But I do believe the buddy system that you just mentioned, that's very fascinating, especially to companies where they have a lot of young workers, new workers coming out of college. Hopefully those that are listening, try that out in your work environment. Let us know what you think. But that's a very insightful thing to mention, Khurshid.
Thank you.
The U.S. unemployment rate stood at 3.7% in August of this year, and it's even lower in some industries where the competition for talent is really tough. What are some of the unique ways in which companies can get creative so that they attract top talent, even when faced with such low unemployment rates? Is there anything that has particularly worked well for you?
So in this current job market, right, remote work or partial work is a big factor in attracting talent. And that's what I was telling you earlier as well. Many people are not ready to go into the office 5 days of the week. And companies that are offering remote or hybrid options, right, definitely have an inherent advantage. And I want to give you an example here, and I'm going to name the company. So when Elon Musk asked the Tesla employees to work, get back into work, right? And I was reading, I was connected to a recruiter from Ford, and she made a very smart, you know, statement on her page that day saying, "Hey, I know Tesla is asking you to come into work. At Ford, we are all work from home. Come join us." So I think she's a very smart and savvy recruiter. And, you know, those are the kind of moves that are going to be expected. There is talent going to be pulled from organizations if you are not flexible, you know. So
that was a very hot topic for a lot of people. Case studies are being performed on that as well. But right. You're right. It becomes a competitive disadvantage for a company like Tesla, where you're now starting to push people who are losing that flexibility. And they might start thinking, why do I want to keep working here for the same role? I can go join another company, do the same thing, but have the flexibility.
Exactly, exactly. And I also see that, you know, there. So the other thing that I've seen is many companies are offering, you know, fringe benefits, right? Better work culture, etc., which is great, you know, great marketing, you know, great brand recognition of the company. But I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the bottom line, like, what are you, you know, providing to the employees in terms of the overall package, which is the base pay, the bonus, the stock, you know? So even if you might have the best brand in the market, right? If you come 50K below what, you know, competition is offering, you know, why would I join the best brand? You know, money is important, right? We all have to survive, especially in Silicon Valley, right? Where the housing market is ridiculous, right? Two people have to work to be able to even afford a house. So, you know, the companies have to think about it. What is the competition offering, right? Mm-hmm. Just don't lowball the candidates because you have a big name. That's another key, you know, factor that I'd like to let organizations know as well. And last but not the least, what I'm also thinking about, you know, when we are looking at talent, right? And when you said unemployment was at 3.7%, so the pool is very, very small. We are talking about tech talent shortage right now. So how do you compete with these, you know, limited, you know, resources, right? So correct. I think a holistic solution in this regard is to broaden your talent pool. That is to get more and more people trained into the tech, you know, workforce. And I can give you an example, which is, you know, an example that my company is taking care of. We have this program called the Make Dev Reskill Program, which is offered by C-Prime. So basically, this program offers an opportunity for people who lack tech work experience to come into the tech field. It's like a six-month program where, you know, the candidates go through a comprehensive training and, you know, we help them place in the industry as well. And I've seen some great success. Not just with, you know, Make Dev Reskill, because this is a newer program for C-Prime, but when I was working with eBay a long time ago, there was a similar program called the Year Up, and we had a lot of good candidates that came from the Year Up program at eBay.
I'm actually familiar with the Year Up program here, based here in Miami.
Oh, awesome, awesome. So we had some great candidates, you know, who also got full-time employment at eBay, and then the ones who went, you know, finished their contracts, went outside of eBay, also are doing really, really well. So I, you know, personally feel if companies invest, you know, in programs like these, we will still have the shortage. Okay. Don't get me wrong, you know,
right.
But we'll have less shortage is what I'm thinking. And we'll give opportunities to, you know, people who didn't think of taking, you know, tech as their career when they, you know, were graduating high school or, you know, college, but like 10 years down the line, they're like, maybe I need to get into tech. How do I get in now? Do I have to go through the whole bachelor's program? Doesn't make sense, right? It's a program.
It doesn't, especially if the work that you'll be doing has little or nothing to do with the bachelor's degree that you're obtaining or looking to obtain.
Correct, correct. So programs like these, I think, will help. And again, you know, I'm, you know, asking all my listeners, go to the C-Prime website, look at this program. And if you're interested, reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to connect you with the right folks.
There you go. You'll have 100,000 people reaching out to you. So be ready.
I'm doing a little bit of marketing for my company on this podcast as well.
That's all well and good. So last question, what has helped you to get to where you are? And what of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career similar to yours?
It sounds very simple and it's very basic. I would say hard work, respect for others, attention to detail, clear and honest communication as well. And I keep saying these to even remind my teenage daughter right now. You know, honestly, there's no magic, you know, there's not a magic wand or there are no shortcuts, right? If you work hard, right, you will achieve your goals. And just paying attention to the basic common sense principles will take one very far away. Probably, you know, one of the most important things for me is the never give up attitude, which is also known as, I would say, resilience. It doesn't matter how many times you trip, stumble, or fall flat on your face and fail. It matters that you don't let it impact your morale. You pick yourself back up, dust yourself off, and keep moving onward and upward.
Khurshid, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. I've enjoyed this.
Thank you, Fred, for giving me the opportunity.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.